Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni.
Throw game for the win.
Gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy.
Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Monday. Glad to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio stations, affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, or the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Welcome in. Keep it locked in where you got it all day for the best in sports information. If you're following us on social media as well, just, hit the like buttons and subscribe and all that good stuff. Glad to have you. Plenty to get to on the program today. Don Fisher joins us as always. Coach Griff will be along for a recap of the weekend, and Greg Rakestraw will find out what he had going on with all the high school and the Colts. The Colts win their first season opener since 2013 in dominating fashion over the Miami Dolphins. So we'll have a fun conversation with that one. Daniel Jones, looked pretty good out there running things for the Colts, and looks like it was the right decision. Of course, this is one game. You cannot base a season on one game. But, hey, they did something they haven't done in 12 years, 13 years, whatever it really was. And that's an accomplishment, but they didn't just barely win the game. So, looked pretty good out there. And shutting Tua down, forcing into several turnovers, just a good opening game for the Colts. A heck of a lot better than I think most people would have expected. So, good looking for the shoe. And then last night on Sunday Night Football, they had the opener, which was a great game alone, the Ravens and the Bills. But the pregame promo was Peyton Manning and his son Marshall, which was kind of funny, to be honest with you. It was going back to the first ever Sunday night game, which was the Colts New York Giants matchup of brothers playing against each other in the NFL. And ironically, right now, you've got that going on the same IU team with quarterback Fernando and Roberto Mendoza, the Mendoza brothers. Both played over the weekend. Both threw a touchdown pass. You're not going to find that on any other college team in the country. So congratulations to those guys. Congratulations to Indiana with another better looking win this time around. The offense looked a lot better. We'll talk more about that when Coach joins us and get into all of that. TD Bros, there you go. TD Bros, Rocket Bros, the Cuban Missile Brothers. Cuban Missile Crisis is what they give other teams. There you go. How about that? Appreciate everybody joining us, no matter where, with your comments as well. How was your weekend? Derek says, who was that guy playing quarterback for the Colts yesterday? It didn't look like Daniel Jones. Hey, it looked pretty good, really. Yeah, that's the thing, man. Everything is different. Every year is different. IU men's soccer beat Notre Dame last night. Best start of the season since 1997. They're now ranked number 4. Not only did they beat Notre Dame, they already didn't. Would they tie Clemson? I don't remember. And I hate that I missed that game or match, to be honest with you. I would have liked to have gone to that, but 7 days a week is not all that much fun. So, but appreciate you guys being with us on this Monday, the IU Athletics Hall of Fame welcomed a new class, and I was fortunate enough to be there. Tom Crean came in. You know, you can think whatever you want to think about him as a coach. I don't care. As a person, he's a hell of a person. I mean, I've already said that multiple times. He's joined us on the show numerous times. I had never personally met him face-to-face until the other night. But everybody that went in had just an incredible story. And I look forward to talking to Don about this a little bit because he was the MC, of course. Meredith Dickensheets, who was a rower here, had never rowed before she came to IU. Zero experience. And she went on to become a two-time All-American. How you do that? Huh? How the hell do you do that? Rowing is not an easy sport, man. Angel Escobedo, love Angel. One of the truly great people in sports. Look forward to getting him on, hopefully this week. I was going to have him on, and I'm glad I waited until after the ceremony. Got to see his family, and it was just a cool moment. And getting to learn about some of these people that normally I would not have probably given. Glenn Terry, he was actually in school when I was track guy, but so much more to these people and than their accomplishments on the field. Although most of the time those accomplishments are just unbelievable. Mel Grooms played football back in the 40s on possibly Indiana's best teams ever, played with Taliaferro. Renee Taliaferro was there. I got to sit at the table with her and Mark Deal and others. Cody Zeller went in. Of course, he had a great impact on the basketball program, but these others were all here for 4 years. And then Dr. Peggy Martin, she was a three-sport athlete at IU. In field hockey, in women's basketball, and softball. And she said she had never even seen a field hockey stick until the coach at IU handed it to her. Yeah. Not only that, she is now the winningest coach in NCAA history in a sport that she didn't even play at IU, volleyball. How about them apples? Just nuts. Yeah, just all great stories. Look forward to talking to Don about some of that, though. He was the MC, and I will try to not miss that again. It was just such an enjoyable night seeing. Well, you see a lot of people that you either know or don't know, or in, say, Tom Crean's case, I know, but had not personally met. And look forward to getting him back on and in the near future, talking about this experience and everything else that's coming up this year. IU football wins, of course, wins big over the weekend over Kennesaw State. Not as concerning as it was the week before with the offense that looked pretty strong. And not only that, this was an offense that for the second week in a row just dominated on the ground. This week, though, it was not Roman Hemby who was the workhorse last week. Last week, it was Roman Hemby who got most of the carries in the first, and then it went to Kalon Black, and then in the third quarter to Lee Beebe. This week, Lee Beebe got the call in the first quarter, and, man, he was running wild. It was just crazy to watch him. But then he ended up being the quote-unquote workhorse this week for the Hoosiers. I believe did he get over 100 yards? I'm trying to think because I'm waiting for this to pull up. But the Hoosiers themselves go over 300 yards rushing again, like I said. 313 on the ground, 280 in the air, 593 overall, just under 600 yards. And that was what I call a lot of pop plays. They weren't putting up 60, 70-yard plays. They were just doing it. Fernando Mendoza goes 18 of 25, 245 yards, four touchdown throws through the air, 72% completion rate, and a 207 QBR. Little bro Alberto goes a perfect 3 of 3 for 35 yards, one touchdown, 100% completion rate for a 308 QBR. I'm out. I'm quitting right there, baby. Take that 308 QBR and walk away. Kennesaw State, however, went through three different quarterbacks. Dexter Williams, who started the game, threw two passes, lost a yard, and had a 45.8 QBR. Then they brought in Ulatowski, who was 2 of 3, 86.3. And Odom was 10 of 16, 176 yards of 142. Regardless, they went through three different quarterbacks. I don't know if that was just trying to get guys work, knowing that, hey, we're not going to win this game, so let's get some guys in some work. On the ground, Indiana helds Kennesaw State to 89 yards rushing this week. Big change. They didn't give up those gigantic plays. The longest run they gave up on the day was 26 yards. They gave up a 24-yarder and a 20-yarder to three different guys. But the guy that had the 26-yarder only had 34 yards on the day. So much better job by the defense keeping things in check. On the rushing side for Indiana, I mentioned Lee Beebe. Didn't quite cross the century mark at 90 yards on just 11 attempts, though. That's 8.2 yards per carry. Omar Cooper, one carry, 75 yards. Yeah, they a little end around reverse, whatever. Worked very nicely. Roman Hemby, only 9 carries, 64 yards, 7.1 yards per carry. Kalon Black, 10 carries, 57 yards, 5.7 per. So just a very, very good, healthy mix. I mean, if Roman Hemby could have gotten one more carry, maybe the carry that Cooper got or one less for Leo, they would have had all three running backs with 10 carries, which that is, you want to talk about having a consistent backfield. And man, you've got three guys that you're giving the ball to that much that are all being successful. That's what Kurt Cignetti wants to see and wants to develop right now. So, and they're doing just that. Let's see. Penalties, only 4 penalties on the Hoosiers, with one of those coming really late. So, and that only 7 total in the game. Pretty clean game. So a good, a much, much better game by Indiana on the offensive side and defensive side. So we talked about that improvement that comes between weeks 1 and 2. Yeah, we saw plenty of it. And we'll talk more about it all and the Big Ten, Purdue. Hey, man, Barry Odom already bucking for Big Ten Coach of the Year, baby. He's got the Boilers at 2-0, doubled their win totals for last year, and they look good doing it as well. Great improvement by the Boilers. We'll talk about the rest of the Big Ten. Don Fisher's going to join us next. Illinois gets a huge win as that game looms for Indiana. Man, that's going to be a 4-0 contest that I will promise. Everybody's wondering what time that game's going to be. Not announced yet, but if I was a betting man and I put some bets down before, I would bet on Big Fox Noon Saturday game for that. So we're going to take a quick break, back with Don Fisher right after these messages.
Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday, and that means a visit from your favorite and mine, Don Fisher, the voice of the Hoosiers. And Don, I know you had a great time on Saturday, but even maybe a better time Friday night before we get to the game, as Indiana's athletics welcomed in a new class to its Athletics Hall of Fame. And man, it was my first time attending, and boy, did I enjoy the hell out of the stories by the inductees, learning about people that I probably never would have, to be honest with you, would not have taken the time to learn, but some of this stuff you wouldn't have, but incredible. Whether it was Peggy Martin or Glenn Terry or Mel Groom's family, all of that stuff was just so cool, and you were right in the middle of it being the MC.
Well, it was a fun night. It always is. Been doing this thing for I don't know how many years now. It's been about 20 or so that I've been able to be the MC for the program. Maybe miss one or two in there because of football or something, but it's always a great night when you get a chance to hear these athletes who played years ago and were just they loved Indiana University, and they all of them talk about it like it was one of the greatest things that they ever did. It was they came to a school that taught them a lot of different things, how to be men, how to be women, you know, so many different stories. And many of them get very emotional when they're up there accepting this Hall of Fame induction. And that was the case again in that particular show that we saw on Friday night. But it's a fun night. These athletes are so appreciative of being put into the Hall of Fame itself. And I just love doing it. It's a big part of what I've been able to do for a long, long time. And it's really fun to hear those stories.
Not only that, all of them have gone on just to be successful people in life. Correct. And you can tell they're great people in life. Peggy Martin, I mean, she may be the character of the night, but also they may possibly the most successful of the night. I was talking earlier about a doggo. She lettered in three sports at IU, which is unheard of, and right. is the all-time winningest coach in NCAA history in a sport she didn't even play at IU.
Right.
So volleyball. That's a little wild. Yeah, crazy.
Great volleyball coach has taught at I think all three levels too of college volleyball. So she was remarkable, and of course her favorite line was, "Did I tell you I love Indiana University?"
Yes, and you can tell she meant it though.
Yeah,
and she did. That's another thing that these people you could tell. I don't mean to be offensive. They were all enjoyed the hell out of their time in college.
Right.
And the friends they met, the people, coaches, whomever it was, their family that encouraged them, their moms that said, "You ain't coming home." all of that good stuff, and it was all great. Angel Escobedo, who we'll get on here soon, I love him to death. He is just, I mean, that's a guy that comes from East Chicago, and we all know about East Chicago, Gary, Indiana area. And the success that his family has helped propel him to. And that was a family affair there, the brothers, the cousins, right. all of that.
Well, and Cody Zeller, of course, was inducted as well. A guy that I thought, you know, he was the transitional guy in regard to Indiana basketball through the Tom Crean era. Because if everybody remembers, Tom took over. I think he had two walk-ons on his basketball team at the time when there was no transfer portal at that juncture, and had to rebuild the program from the ground up. And Tom was there to represent, to be there for Cody Zeller, as he was for Victor Oladipo a few years ago. So it was just a really wonderful night. It was fun. It always is. And I'm so glad that I get to be a part of it.
Well, you did a great job as always. And I mentioned earlier, Tom Crean came in for Cody's induction. And I don't care what people think of him as a coach or whatever, as a human, he's just as good as they get. He's always been gracious with us coming on the show. And that's not the first time I think he's been in for an induction either.
Right. No, there's no question. So, and a lot of his Cody's teammates came back too. So it was a fun night for him and his family. And Cody Zeller is probably my second all-time favorite player in Indiana. Randy Whitman's my first. I've said that many times in the past because I knew his family when we first got here to Indianapolis, and I took the job to be the voice of the Hoosiers. But Cody Zeller is probably my second favorite player because, number one, he might be the most humble of all the stars that we've had at Indiana University. And secondly, he is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. I don't think he's ever found anybody that would say anything other than he's one of the nicest people I've ever met. Cody Zeller, just a great kid. And I think that whole Zeller family are just great people. There's no question about it.
And I think his nickname follows in right, the Big Handsome. That's just one I love. That just cracks me up. I just think it's funny. It's yeah, he is, because he is a Shire type of guy, or, yeah, you know, he's humble and all that. So all great stuff. And a great weekend continued on Saturday on the Gridiron Dot as Indiana continued to do Indiana things and got closer to that team that we saw a year ago. Of course, the improvement between weeks one and week two that we talk about so much, we saw happen both offensively and defensively. Indiana defensively did not allow the big gainers that they did a week ago, holding Kennesaw State to less than 90 or less than 100 yards total rushing.
Right.
And they had to go through three quarterbacks. On the other side, offensively for Indiana, they continue to be an extraordinarily balanced team. Last year, it was a little more passing than running. This year, it's been reversed so far. But, man, when you've got three guys that you can hand the ball to in Beebe and Kalon Black and, of course, the big man Roman Hemby, and two different guys have been the workhorses in these first two games.
Well, all I can tell you is that Kurt Cignetti was looking for major improvement in game two, just like he was a year ago after game one with Florida International. And he got it. Fernando Mendoza was terrific in this ball game, in my opinion. I think he did a tremendous job of improving from game one to game two. He just looked more comfortable. He made his reads better. He didn't have that nervousness that you would expect in a first ball game as he did in game one. And he took accountability for that after that performance and came back and showed people what he's really like as a quarterback. He played very well in this ball game. And what we saw was a really good defensive performance as well. Not the biggest plays that we saw in the first ball game. None of that kind of thing happened. But there were so many different players in this ball game, I think you could point out, just made a difference. And the one guy that we just don't know what his status will be, Lewis Moore, got another interception, played really well in this ball game at that safety spot again. And Wednesday, we're going to find out whether he's eligible for the rest of the season, or at least a portion of the rest of the season, or if he's done, because that judge is going to make a ruling on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but just from things that the judge has said, I'm going to be shocked and the fact that that's been allowed to go on and play already in the season, that if that, and with all the other things, the precedents that we've seen guys that are in college for 7 years. Some there have been 8 year guys. So I'm going to be hard pressed to think that he does not get to continue, but we'll address that Wednesday when the decision comes out.
Right.
Indiana now moves forward to their last and final non-conference game of the season, quick as it comes up this Friday, Don, against an Indiana State team, which, I'll be honest with you, is generally overmatched by most teams. And if Indiana is getting into that realm that they are getting into, man, that's not the time to catch Indiana. Although all this Indiana has put up 500 and 600 yards of offense, but they have yet to really unleash. They haven't even opened up the playbook yet, Don. We haven't seen these big gainers or anything like this. Is just being pretty, I don't want to say vanilla, but they haven't opened up the playbook and are gaining these kind of yards. So that's a great sign.
Well, an end around on Saturday would tell you that they did open up the playbook a little bit. Omar Cooper goes 75 yards for a touchdown on basically an end around play or a reverse type play. So that was pretty special. But you're right. Indiana's not shown a lot so far. It's been pretty straightforward football. And not giving away a lot of what they hope to do later on. And here's the other thing. This is a football team that the number one mantra from Kurt Cignetti is always, you stack days one after the other. You got to improve every time you're out there in the football field throughout the season. And if you don't, you're wasting time, because obviously the teams that you're going to play coming up here shortly, it's going to be big time. And Indiana is going to take on a team in Illinois in 2 weeks that is now ranked in the top 10. So the real tests are about to take place. And of course, they'll try to hone everything this coming week with Indiana State, a ball club that is 2-0 at this point. They beat Eastern Illinois badly in their last ball game, 38-14, a team that last year they lost to by a touchdown. And they beat them solidly in this next contest against Eastern. So I never take any team lightly. You've got to give every team respect. And there's no question. Kurt Mallory's a good football coach, always has been. Played football at Indiana, coached at Michigan for a long time. This guy can coach football. He's just at a school that has really struggled to get enough talent to put out in the field on a consistent basis. So, and I think he's got a better team this year. I really do. He's got a freshman quarterback who's now a sophomore, played all last season. They got a good running back. They got a guy that's a really good receiver and a kid named Rochelle. They've got tools. And if Indiana takes them lightly, they'll get burnt in some way. So, obviously, this is a big ball game just in the sense of improving on what they've done so far.
Yeah, just making sure that they clean up whatever it is they want to clean up. There hasn't been a lot of penalties, only four penalties in that last game. One of those comes late, which was kind of a pointless penalty. But we'll see as they move forward. Illinois plays Western Michigan this week as well as that clash you mentioned coming up soon. And it is going to be a big clash. It's going to be one that everyone that will be on national TV. I'm guessing that's going to be a Fox Noon, Big Noon kickoff game personally, although it has not been announced. That just because Fox has that opportunity. And I cannot imagine that they won't be putting those two ranked teams up. And that would be a great opportunity for the Hoosiers because Illinois had moved into the top 10, like you said. They play another top 10 team 2 weeks three weeks, because they have a bye game in there. So they're going to have two top 10 team games in the first half of their season. So anybody wants to complain about the schedule, zip it, baby, zip it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And we moved the talk show this week, Inside IU Football with Kurt Cignetti, to Wednesday night. So we'll be a Wednesday night show at Hoosier Hanks in Bloomington. Hope everybody shows up for that as well.
Make sure you do. Who's the special guest, or do you know yet?
Don't know yet. We'll find out more than likely, because we had the defensive coordinator on, Brian Haynes, this past week. So more than likely to be Mike Shanahan, but it could be somebody else. We'll just have to wait and see.
Make sure you head out to Hoosier Hanks, 1285 College Mile Road there in Bloomington. Don, thank you, sir. Look forward to seeing you.
Thanks for having me, Jim. See you, buddy.
Thank you, buddy. We've got more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio and more football to talk about. Coach will join us. We'll do a Big Ten wrap-up as we get closer and closer to the Big Ten games happening. Illinois wins a nice game over Duke on the road, 45-19. That is, wait a minute, yeah. And it was a giant second half for the Illini. 31 second half points. 17 in the fourth quarter. 14 in the second or the third quarter. That's impressive. That, to me, that is impressive to win a game going away like, or not really going away. They were in the lead 14-13 at the half, but to put up that many more points in the second half, you usually, especially in the fourth quarter, when they were already up, they were already up two scores. And then they put three more scores on the board. So pretty impressive for Illinois. Let's see. What was the – let me see the box score. Where did Altmyer end up going? He is 22 of 31 for 296 yards and three touchdowns. And 85.9 QBR. Seems kind of low for those numbers. No interceptions. Duke, they threw for a total of 356 yards. So the Illini giving up some yardage through the air to the Dukies. And most of that coming from Darian Mensah, who threw for 334 yards. So they gave up a chunk of passing yards. It'll be interesting to see Indiana's offense graduate more toward the throwing side as we get into the bigger games, I would imagine. On the ground, Illinois only ran for a total of 123. So they are definitely much more passing heavy than they are on the run side. They're not nearly as balanced as Indiana. I think that's something that they're going to have to deal with. Duke only ran for 82 yards against Illinois, so I'm not sure that they I know they haven't seen a team that the balanced type offense that Indiana has, not this season, because they haven't played anybody other than Duke. So there you go on that. That is going to be a hell of a game, sold out already. I would guess that it's going to be a noon game, but that's my guess because Fox, I would be surprised if Fox does not make that their big noon kickoff game. Let's see, where is my schedule that I had pulled up for games for this week? And we'll definitely determine that, the schedule for the Big Ten this week. That's actually next week. We don't see that. So in week four in the Big Ten, the opportunities to have the big noon kick, anybody else, you've got Oregon State at Oregon. Now that's not going to be it. Illinois at Indiana, Maryland at Wisconsin. Now that won't be it. Michigan State at USC. Nope, that definitely won't be it. That would be a 9 o'clock a.m. game. Purdue at Notre Dame. That's an NBC Peacock game. Michigan at Nebraska at 3:30 has already been set at CBS Paramount. And Washington at Washington State is also going to be on CBS. So the only opportunity, yeah, there's no doubt to me that Fox will definitely take the Illini at Indiana. You've got two ranked teams there. So we'll take a quick break. Up next, Greg Rakestraw is going to join us. We'll get caught up this weekend. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday, getting you caught up from the weekend of action. And nobody does it better than Greg Rakestraw, because he's usually in the middle of most of it. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And yes, if you're going to lead the show with Hoosiers football and Colts football, this may be one of the best weekends you could have all season, my friend.
And Purdue, who is on a run, man. They're 2-0. They've doubled their win total of last year.
This is quite true, and let's hope they add one or two more as the season goes along. Although, Jim, I do think they can be competitive with Southern Cal since they got them at home coming up on Saturday.
It'll be interesting. Southern Cal, though, has looked pretty damn good. I have to say they've taken a major jump, but we'll see about that. What was your weekend? I'm sure it started on Friday night.
Pike and Ben Davis Friday night, Indiana State, IU's opponent on Saturday. They're 38-14 winning against Eastern Illinois. They are also 2-0, but for them, it's the first time since the 80s that has been the case. And then, of course, Colts football yesterday, which I got to broadcast and be a part of a season-opening win for the first time since 2013. So not a bad weekend for yours truly.
Yeah, you mentioned Indiana State going 2-0 for the first time since the 80s. That's crazy. Here's a crazy stat. I mentioned Purdue. They're 2-0. Of course, they haven't played anyone yet, neither is Indiana or most teams. But I cannot believe Barry Odom is the first Purdue coach to start 2-0 since the 60s. How is that possible?
I would assume. First
Joe
of all,
Tiller, my God, Joe Tiller was a great coach there.
Correct. And Joe Tiller's first game was Toledo and they lost. His second game was Notre Dame and they won. And so a couple of things come to mind. First of all, normally when you're the new coach, it's not like you're inheriting this team that was really good. Normally you're the new coach because the last guy got fired. But then what I just said in terms of the opponent, you got to remember, it used to be you would see Notre Dame the second game of the year almost every season. And most of those times, Notre Dame is going to win that football game. Not every time, but most. And it's kind of like the same thing in Indiana State. I know Indiana State has not been great in football, but part of it is at the FCS level, normally you're playing a team like Indiana in week one or week two, which is why them being 2-0 is not the norm. So part of it is struggles of the program. Part of it is simply the way the schedule works out most years.
Yeah, and then the Colts, I was watching that game. Daniel Jones had just a great game. He looked pretty daggone good. The offense looked good. The defense did a good job forcing turnovers on Tua. And that was just as good a start as you could ever hope for the Colts. But, of course, part of that's because they haven't won, as you mentioned, since 2013, which is also unbelievable because they had some good teams in there. But it is what it is. But that's a great way to start the season.
It is. And frankly, it is by far the most complete game a Shane Steichen team has played. You know, the only other game that kind of reminds me of is towards the end of the 2013 season when they beat the Steelers 30-13. It might be the largest margin since that win for the Colts. It is their largest margin in any win, dating back to a win against the Texans in 2021. It was the largest margin of victory for any team in the National Football League yesterday. And of all of the factoids I could drop at you from yesterday's game, the fact the Indianapolis Colts had the football seven times and scored seven times, and no one has done that since the late 70s, is mind-boggling to me. So everybody was hopeful for Danny Dimes, but the start that he had yesterday was otherworldly. And so, yes, there is suddenly a lot more optimism about the Indianapolis Colts than there was heading into yesterday's game.
Yeah, Taylor looked good running the ball, and everything just looked good. Everything went well, which if you can do that in game one against a pretty solid Miami Dolphins team, you've got to go into week two with a lot of confidence.
Correct. And again, you said it well on the Dolphins. You know, I think there are some pretty distinct tiers in the National Football League. And this early, there is the handful of teams that you know are really good, like the Ravens, the Bills, the Chiefs, and maybe in the AFC, you would throw the Chargers into that mix. Then there are the teams that you have a pretty good idea they're going to be really bad. Like, nobody has high expectations for the Browns. Obviously, in the NFC, that team seems to be the Saints, that we all think might be a two- or three-win team. But the vast majority of everybody else is somewhere hovering around 500, which is exactly where the Colts and Dolphins were last year. Those teams are both 8-9. So, you know, you'd have some people go, well, it's just the Dolphins. No, the Dolphins aren't great, but the Dolphins aren't terrible. And the Colts made them look terrible yesterday, and they have been bad, frankly, when Tua has not been playing. Well, I'm pretty sure he played up until the last drive of the game, and the Colts made him 14 of 23 and were plus +3 on takeaways. So, Jim, I think your point is well made. That's how you hope to look in midseason, and the Colts looked that way in week number one. That was a refreshing change of pace.
Yeah, and ironically, the Colts' next two opponents played over the weekend as well, as the Broncos beat the Titans 20-12. They take on the Broncos next, and then the Titans in a divisional game right after that.
Correct, and obviously, and I thought it was ironic, the NFL schedule makers gave the Colts the Dolphins and the Broncos out of the chute because those were the two teams they really were kind of fighting for that last playoff spot. A season ago, you know, the Broncos got it. There was a pretty big drop off from team six to team seven, kind of the way that it worked out last year. But you know, the Broncos, to be honest, didn't look like they were in their best form yesterday. Turned over four times in Bo Nix's second season. Not all of those were on him, but just kind of the way that it worked out. But they found a way to win. And again, the Titans, and I should have included them, they're a team kind of like the Browns and the Saints that the expectation is, playing a rookie quarterback in Cam Ward, it is going to be a learning process, you know, for the Titans this year. But that should be kind of a litmus test type of game for the Colts against the Broncos. The Colts can get to 2-0, which, Jim, has not happened since 2009, and that was a Super Bowl season. That was the year that Colts went 14-0 before kind of pulling the plug in that game against the Jets in late December. You know, this all of a sudden now, expectations change. for this football team if you can beat a potential playoff team like the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, and so it's a good start for the Colts. And everyone that was having a great consternation about the quarterback race, it looks like at the end of the day, there wasn't really a race at all. And you have a clear understanding of why Coach Steichen went with Daniel Jones, because he looked pretty decent out there.
He looked beyond decent. He was phenomenal. 22 of 29, 271 yards. Quarterback rating was in the 115 range. Seven carries, 26 yards, accounted for all three touchdowns. Again, seven drives, seven scores. That was beyond what was expected of Daniel Jones. And again, it's one game. Now that there's a little tape out there of him in the Colts offense, we'll see how Denver now tries to combat that. But as debuts go, it was jaw-droppingly good for Danny Dimes a day ago.
Absolutely, and that is a great start for the Colts, of course, as they look to get things turned around under new leadership, new everything. It's just a revitalized organization, and hopefully that will continue as they will take on the Denver Broncos in week two. So look forward to that. High school coming up. What you got going this week, my brother?
So this week I head south. We, as ISC, our big game is Brownsburg and Avon. And Brownsburg is the defending champs in 6A and 3-0 and number one. Avon got knocked off for the first time this year by HSE 17-14. But Rob Gibson's doing a good job in terms of turning around that Avon Orioles program. But there's one game a year that I head south and in the southwest. So I'm going to Hatchet Hollow for Washington and Princeton, their homecoming game. A good friend of mine is Joe Morris, the head football coach at Washington. They have us come down one game a year and produce it from their completely new football facility in Hatchet Hollow, which looks great. He is still in the process of trying to build more of a competitive football tradition in Washington. They're 1-2 so far this year. But I'll be using old I-69 on Friday night to do a little 3A, 4A football coming up this week.
Make sure you're fueled up. That can be a lonely stretch. Just kidding. But looking forward to all of that. Cody Zeller, ironically, inducted into the IU Athletics Hall of Fame over the weekend from Washington High School. So a little combination there. But looking forward to that. And then the Colts, you'll have your duties with them next weekend as well.
That is correct. So I'll have the post-game show for the radio network. And for those of you that are at the game, you will hear me on the Red Zone highlights. It is my sixth year of doing those in the stadium. And I put a parenthesis with question mark and exclamation point. I can't believe it's year 14 of being a part of the Colts radio network, but that's what it is for me. And again, a reminder, last year, in the last couple of years, really, the Colts have been the not ready for primetime players, a lot of 1 o'clock games. This year, that changed a little bit just because of geography. They play both the AFC West and the NFC West this year. A lot of 4 o'clock games for the Colts this season. This week is one of those. Even though it's at home, it is a 4 o'clock kickoff. So if all of a sudden after yesterday, you go, hey, I might want to go watch a game, clock kickoff for the game against the Broncos.
Yeah, the majority of their games usually are the 1 o'clock variety, East Coast time, so they can get more of those West Coast teams in. But sometimes you got to move it around, especially when you're playing a West Coast team. I guess maybe is that the reason to get more of a Denver audience?
Perhaps, or it's just simply, hey, this was the set of games. And, you know, normally you're going to have, three or four games that will be in the 4 o'clock window. Now, of note, like the national window is Fox for this week, so we're a 4:05 kick. So basically what we really are, we are the game that it gets offered to. If you're, say, an AFC market and your team plays at 1 o'clock, or maybe a better set, a Fox market, and your team plays at 1 o'clock, you are not going to have you're not going to carry the CBS affiliate. Is not going to carry a game in the 1 o'clock window because nobody's going to watch. So you carry a game in the 4 o'clock window instead. So we are kind of the alternate game for a lot of those markets, is the reason why Colts are the 4 o'clock game this week.
Well, yeah, I would say that's a big part of it. And then the Raiders later on as well. So they've got a great mix of West Coast games there. But the Raiders.
Yeah, again, Jimmy, they play the AFC West and the NFC West. But what is also unique about the schedule is the Colts only play two divisional games until Thanksgiving. And they don't see the Texans or Jaguars. Yeah, right. They don't play the Texans or Jaguars until Thanksgiving or later. So four of their last six games are against AFC South foes. They play the Titans twice in September and October and get them out of the way, which is why the thought kind of was going into the season, hey, if you're just in contention for the division going to Thanksgiving, all of that will be in front of you because you're going to play the two teams you're competing with for a division championship, for a playoff spot out of the South. And obviously yesterday, you know, all signs are good about potentially having a really good start to this season. Frankly, the schedule gets tougher once you get to, say, late October and November. So if you can take advantage of these first six or seven games where you get the Titans twice and where you have four of your first six games at home, then there's an opportunity to make hay come November and December for this football team.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, last season it seemed like the Colts' schedule was more front-loaded with divisional opponents, which is not really what you probably want. Until you want to be able to get through some games and get going before you get into divisional play, and this year they do have that. But last year it was really front-loaded.
Yeah, and what's unique about it is that, you know, divisional games are just six of your 17 games. You know, and so they're obviously important. But it's so the opposite of college football, where, you know, two-thirds or three-quarters of your schedule are against teams from your own league. And in the pros, it's just one-third of your schedule. So it's just kind of odd and quirky how the math checks out in terms of six out of 17 games.
And then last night, I'm not sure if you got to see the Ravens and the Bills. Man, that was a great game. The Ravens strong first half, but the Ravens or the Bills with unbelievable precision execution on the 2-minute offense at the end of the first half to get a 3-point field goal. And I mean, I think the guy caught the ball and went out of bounds at 0.01. And they were on the clock and get that field goal in there, which that was just great execution.
Well, those are two of the best teams in the National Football League. And you know, we saw the Ravens in week one of the preseason. Now, obviously, we didn't see any of their starters, but I have this stat on hand from having been in Baltimore back on August the 7th. They returned 10 of 11 defensive starters, and the one they didn't return is a first-round pick. Now, I acknowledge that they're pretty good on defense, and the Bills just put 41 on them. That's how good Josh Allen and company are. But again, in the AFC, to me, there's a pretty clear pecking order, all right? There's the Chiefs, there's the Ravens, there's the Bills. And I would put the Chargers just below that because the Chargers just beat the Chiefs. But frankly, the Chargers got to show more in the postseason. You would probably put the Texans kind of around the Chargers as the favorites in the AFC South. But to be honest, they didn't look all that good yesterday, you know, in losing at the Rams and only putting up 9 points in that game. Frankly, the Texans did not look good for most of last season, but the AFC South was so bad, they kind of had that division wrapped up by early November and just kind of coasted, you know, for the last couple of months of the season. Everything else, I kind of think, is up for grabs. In other words, there's probably a playoff spot or two that can be had. And clearly, even though they played yesterday, I think the Colts have entered the chat in terms of that conversation. But as it relates to last night, I think the Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens are two of the best, probably four or five teams in the entire National Football League.
Absolutely. Look forward to more of it next week, my friend. Enjoy your week until we get to do it again.
You got it, buddy. I'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, sir. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network and the Colts Broadcasting Crew. We've got more coming up. Coach Griff joins us next, right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. Getting you wrapped up, set up, and ready to go. Coach Griff joins us now from the ISB Studios North. How was your weekend?
Good. Good. Kind of a lazy Sunday, kind of catching up on all the sleep that I was missing from the past week, but good lazy day.
Yeah, I saw someone mention and quickly checked and found out they were exactly correct. I failed to put my picks in for the pick'ems over the weekend. So I'm not officially out, but essentially out. Man, you miss a whole week of picks. That will that kind of throws you in the dumpster. So
yeah, I was 5-5, so I'm out anyway.
not necessarily. It's a long season. You can make that up. I don't think that I can make up 10 winners though. Not that I would have had 10 winners over just yesterday, but that's a lot of potential mm-hmm. wins to have lost and to have to make it up. Just last week, the picks were Iowa State at Iowa. I remember having consternation about that. I'm like, okay, I don't know which way I'm going to go there. And it ended up being a close game, 16-13, yeah. Iowa State getting the win. It would have been nice for Indiana for Iowa to have gotten that win, because that means Iowa would have been ranked this week and they would have been more than likely ranked when Indiana got to them, which would give them three consecutive ranked teams to play in a row. Now, they are going to have two top 10 matchups out of their three games. So I've already met and a road game, and one of those on the road and another road game in between there. So there cannot be any talk about Indiana's schedule. Especially if Indiana can get a win over a top 10 Illinois team, then go to Iowa and get a win. Yeah, you want to talk about some hype on that Oregon game, but we'll wait to get there. Oregon's looking like a runaway freight train right now.
Yeah, they're looking pretty good. That quarterback that they, you know, picked back up out there, transferred from UCLA. Again, I think he was last year. Was he transferred back into Oregon, and they're looking pretty hot right now as a football team, and defensively look really good. So it's gonna be that'll be an interesting game, you know, for them. It's too bad they didn't have them at home.
Yeah, just past weekend in the Big Ten. Ohio State, they handle Grambling 70-0, but that's – what is Grambling? An FCS team, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So, that's not – I mean, I don't want to say it's not impressive, but that's what you're supposed to do to an FCS team when you're the defending national champion.
Mm-hmm.
The game that surprised me a little bit, Penn State only put up 34 points on Florida International.
Yeah, Penn State's one of those teams that I think you're better off playing them earlier in the season than later, because they always seem like they are always kind of stumbling around a little bit. But they'll be interesting to see if they don't stumble prior to Indiana and them playing later in this year. Because that'll be a key component to see how they play out some of their games here in the near future. But that one surprised me, like you said, in the number of points. Illinois is the one game that went from a tight ball game to being out of hand in a matter of a blink of an eye.
They scored a boatload of points in the second half, and most of all in the fourth quarter when they didn't need it. They were already up by two scores.
Yeah.
So, that was impressive to do that on the road. That is going to be a game we will be talking about for certain. Oregon absolutely blasted Oklahoma State 69-3. We've already mentioned the Illini with their 45-19 win at Duke. Michigan loses at Oklahoma 24-13 in an SEC Big Ten matchup. Iowa loses to Iowa State 16-13. Minnesota, a lot of points, 66-0 over Northwestern State. Wisconsin, they go to 2-0 with a 42-10 win over Middle Tennessee. Rutgers blasted Miami of Ohio 45-17. And I thought Miami of Ohio played well in the first week. I forget who they played, but
they played Wisconsin.
Yeah, they were scrappy.
Yeah.
Nebraska put up a lot of points against Akron, 68-0. USC, they for the second week in a row put up a bunch, 59-20 over Georgia Southern. Michigan State also, now they have to go to two overtimes to beat Boston College, 42-40. They get to win to go to 2-0. Purdue, here's a crazy stat for you. Barry Odom is the first Purdue coach to go to start a season 2-0 since the 60s.
Yep. I know.
Indiana has had a number of coaches do that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, mind-boggling. I'm like, wait, what? Purdue's had some really good teams. How did Jeff Brohm not start 2-0 virtually every season? But yeah, there you go. It's the weird fact of the day. UNLV, UCLA, without question, the most disappointing team in the Big Ten. I thought that they were going to make a rise this year. They were going to grow. And, boy, they look like they've taken two steps backwards.
Yeah, they I watched the latter part of that game when they came alive a little bit too late and started playing how you would expect them to play. But I just don't know how good things are at UCLA. I just think there's a dynamic there with the hire that they made and his first impression into the Big Ten media and didn't say much. And, you know, I just got that impression that, man, this may not be good in that sense. But they're going to be a team that's going to be hard to evaluate because you're going to look at them and say, man, they've got some talent. Why are they, you know, 0-2 right now or 0-3 or whatever the case may be here? And that's the thing that you will worry about as a coach, as a team that you know has some talent on it, is like, man, don't wake them up because they've got enough talent to beat you and beat you soundly.
Troy looked like they were going to pull the upset. I can't say of this. Well, I guess you could say of the century. Mm-hmm. I could say the upset of the century, right? Because that's not very old. But Troy, Clemson fans had to be just wailing and gnashing teeth down there, buddy, because that is who Troy played, right? Clemson.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
There's some nervous folks there for a while, but Clemson finally takes care of that and pulls it out. But Tino Sunseri, man, I really think he made a bad move leaving Indiana to go to UCLA and a similar position. Maybe it was a slight upgrade, but is it really? Because
I
think that was a mistake. He should have waited a little longer. I think he should have been a part of a team that's going to continue to grow and be good, and probably could have landed a better position, but he wanted that OC title on his resume, which I guess I understand, but I don't know how good it does you when you're on a team that is not winning, not scoring. Mm-hmm. Nico Amalivan did throw for 255 yards in that game, but
I mean, in the second half, there's when I kind of turned it on. That's when he looked like, you know, a pretty good quarterback at that point in time. But he, you know, they made it. He made some throws that you just scratch your head about. And I get why Tino went. I mean, he had been with Sig for a while. There was not a probability of him becoming an OC there unless Shanahan left. And, you know, as a young coach, you're aspiring to be the guy at some point in time, whether it's a OC or potentially a head coach down the road. And, you know, look, he got paid probably pretty good to go to UCLA, and he's probably at least on a 2-year deal. So worst case scenario, you know, they have to buy him out, you know, and things of that nature. But I get it. There's only so many, you know, those type of jobs out there. And, you know, and Sig wasn't going to pay the money to keep him either. You know, it was going to, he wasn't going to pay him offensive coordinator money to stay in a positional coaching position there at Indiana. And so that's kind of how those things evolve. And yeah, hindsight's always good in college football. Shoulda, coulda, would've. But, you know, I thought offensively they started looking like the team they could become with how they did the distributed the ball. Run game is a little shaky, but I think they'll get better as things go along.
Well, yeah, well, we'll see. But, yeah, just not a great start for them.
Nope.
But what are you going to do?
Disappointing start.
Yeah. Big Ten games coming up in week three. Oregon playing a Big Ten game this week as they will travel east to Chicago to take on Northwestern at noon on Fox. Mm. That should be a blowout of epic proportions as Northwestern just has not looked good. Boy, what a stupid mistake they made firing their coach who had
Fitzgerald.
Yeah, a remarkable job, and I guarantee you they screwed up. He, you know, if somebody's done something, I'll be the first to call it. I just don't think he had anything to do with that, and the issues that they had going on. It was about hazing and all of that, and the president just made a dumb mistake there. But it is what it is. Wisconsin, they traveled to Tuscaloosa, and you know you've already got pressure on Kalen DeBoer. They're coming off a 73-0 win over U of L Monroe. It might not be quite that bad, but yeah, it's going to be a beatdown for Alabama, I think.
Well, this will be a critical game for Kalen in the sense that if they don't beat Wisconsin, you know, handedly, there'll still be the rumblings that are going to be surfacing there for him in that regard. But this is an intriguing matchup because Wisconsin, I think, will, you know, it will be a good test to see, A, where Wisconsin is, and B, is Alabama completely flip the script from a dismal first game performance to, a game now where they've got a Big Ten team coming in and can they beat the Big Ten team? Because I tell you, if Wisconsin were to go to Alabama and get the big win, we may have to check on Paul Feinbaum.
Yeah. That's not going to happen. You're not going to have to worry about that one. I feel pretty confident. So, yeah, but he's got his own issues to deal with. But he gets to chirp about Michigan getting beat by Oklahoma, which not surprised by that. I thought that Michigan was a little bit more hyped up. You've got a freshman quarterback. I did not expect them to go out to Norman and win anyway.
No, and it goes to show you why the quarterback position is so important in college football or in the NFL for all that matter. The kid that they got now at Oklahoma as a quarterback, man, he's good. He's a really good quarterback. He can run it. He can throw it. You know, he can do it all. And that, to me, was their biggest difference from where they were a year ago to where they're at now. Is it Van Meter, I think, is the kid's name. He transferred in from Washington State. So, yeah, they look good. Oklahoma looked good. I mean, their defense looks solid. And they're going to – I think they'll have something to say within that SEC race.
Well, we'll certainly find out as it rolls on. And the Big Ten, there's some games this week. Usually we've got one more week, but everybody's kind of mixing and matching their games. We do have USC coming into West Lafayette. And while Purdue has looked really good so far, especially for Purdue, they looked 1,000% better than they did all of last year, and they've already doubled their win total. But USC, they've looked better than they did all of last year already, I think. And so they're going to be a team to be reckoned with in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, the one thing that I saw, can't remember what I was reading it at, It was talking about the West Coast teams coming to the Midwest or the East Coast, and their performance has not been that great when they've had to do that. So that may be a positive for Purdue having USC at home, and maybe that will be an issue for them, for USC. And we talked about this before, you know, here's a team, if they come out here and have to play a noon kick in the Midwest, I mean, that's a nine o'clock kick out on the West Coast. So there is some things that they have to deal with travel wise when it comes to what time of day they're kicking off against a team in the Midwest. So it'll be a good measuring stick to see where Coach Odom has Purdue at this point in time. Even if they lose the game, but it's a tight ball game, you know, I think they can draw some positives from it. But, yeah, they've done a great job thus far beating the teams they should beat, doing it handedly, and, you know, gaining the confidence those type of teams need to get. You just never know what can happen from that point. And that's why I said this weekend will be a good barometer to see where Purdue fits against a team like USC.
Well, yeah, we'll certainly find out. We've got to take a break. So we've got lots more coming up. Lots of football to talk about and everything else. Hey, how about the Colts, man? They kick it off this weekend. The NFL week one gets underway. We've got another game tonight. The Mannings are back, baby. I can't wait. Looking forward to that. But we're back with plenty more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. A little Monday morning quarterback wrap-up. As a great fun weekend all around. Indiana wins, Purdue wins, the Colts win.
Yeah.
Can't get much better than that. Great weekend. Now, I didn't mention Notre Dame. They don't consider themselves an Indiana school, so why should I? Right.
They were off this weekend, I think, weren't they?
You know what?
I think they were off this week.
Early week to get a bye, man. That's not what you want.
No, I've always found playing one game and then having a bye right after week one is not a great thing to have, but sometimes that's just the way it works out. Because yeah, they had that big Zach Brown concert up there in South Bend. So,
instead of football,
they said, sorry, we're gonna have a Zach Brown.
what are you gonna do? I mean,
yeah, Notre Dame is, you know, probably getting themselves healthy after that big game against Miami. That was a hard-hitting game, too. And they need reps at quarterback because C.J. Carr's that redshirt freshman, and you just mentioned the Michigan young man who I tell you, I was impressed with him. He looks the part. I cannot believe that kid's just a freshman because he looks like he's a junior or senior.
Are you talking about C.J. Carr?
No, I'm talking about the young man from Michigan that we were referencing early against Oklahoma, Bryce Underwood, right?
Oh, their quarterback.
Yeah, he just looks the part in every sense of the imagination that I cannot believe he's a true freshman because he does have a great arm. His problem was they got after him at Oklahoma and they brought a lot of different stuff, you know, at him on Saturday.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Kurt Cignetti, let's hear what the boss man had to say after Saturday's game.
We needed to make, it was far from perfect. We'll see areas there that we're not pleased with tomorrow when we watch a tape. But we took a step forward, the step we needed to take. Probably most pleased with the way we dominated the second half. We got off to a fast start in the game and sort of stumble-bumbled around in the second quarter a little bit. And so it was a 15-point game at halftime, but we outscored them in the second half 31-3, and I think we scored 31 straight at the end. And it was good to empty the bench and see our twos make some plays, particularly in the pass game, like Charlie Becker and some other guys, Alberto. Good day. in terms of making the progress. Also, when we built the big lead, you know, I liked the way our guys kept playing one play at a time like it was nothing, nothing. I didn't see guys laughing on the sideline, kind of a relief syndrome. You know, that's what we ask them to do, time to be satisfied in the locker room. So I was a little bit of a tyrant on the sideline in the fourth quarter, but my job is to make the team the best it can be. So that's the way it is.
There you go. And no apologies. That's what did. Why would you not be a tyrant? I want my coach to be a tyrant. I mean, Nick Saban, just I respect what he accomplished as a coach. I don't always think that he's, you know, unbiased or whatever. That's not relevant. He was a tyrant. Mm-hmm. He was not jumping up and down. You didn't see him running up the sideline congratulating people because he's thinking 2-3 plays ahead. Where are we? What's going on? What's the deal? Yeah,
he's another one of those coaches that doesn't care whether it's the first team or second team. They better execute to the standard that they have set, or he would come unglued on the sideline, and they'd be up 50 points, but he was coming unglued because they weren't living to the standard that is expected when you take the field. And it doesn't matter if it's your first or second team. He just was one of those coaches that everything must be done to a standard, irregardless of who's doing it.
Yeah, and noteworthy. He seemed a lot more. Happy is, well, maybe happier in post-game press conferences this year, smiling, kind of laughing a little bit at times, and that's. Just a little surprising to see him that loose this soon.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, again, second year is always a little bit more comfortable than the first. And, you know, I think some of that was just not trying to give anyone a hint of where he was coming from, whether it's the players or the media. Kind of wanted to have that stoic, you know, mindset, facial expressions, however you want to look at it. And, you could see there's a little bit more joyfulness, I guess would be another word, to see him behind the mic at his pressers. And I think the other thing, too, is I think the media as a whole knows how to approach him better than they did a year ago, right? And I think that leads to that easiness of a presser with him now is that the media knows how to address the questions they want to get answered.
Here's Elijah Wood.
It's Elijah Sherrod.
What's the big key to, you know, the performance you had today?
Really just executing. I feel like, of course, I left some stuff out there, could have had a better game than what I had, but just executing on stuff that I didn't do well last week and then making an emphasis throughout practice on going into the game this week.
What were the things that you felt like you did better this week than last week?
Blocked a little better, my routes, my releases, better with my hands and stuff, and just making plays when the ball came my way, really.
And on Fernando, obviously, he had a really good day. Just sort of give us a receiver's view when a quarterback, you know, solid week one, but then takes a step. What leads to him taking that step?
I feel like just that game experience, getting more comfy. That was our first real time against different guys, so he's only going to get better as each week, so it's good to see for sure.
Is that something people might underestimate, like just, you know, needing a little bit to settle in going in against a different group of guys for the first time?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, throughout camp, you're seeing the same defense every single time, so you probably get a little used to it, but it's different when you're out here and everything's flying around. But he's doing good, as everybody sees, so I'm happy for him.
He kept calling you Waffle House, so I guess the nickname stuck. Is he still eating there?
If we had one here, I would eat there. But when I'm back home in Virginia, I make a stop all the time. Yes, sir.
Haven't changed your favorite dish yet?
No, All-Star breakfast every single time. Okay. Grits, bacon, eggs, man.
I remember that from last year.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's Elijah Surratt, also known as Waffle House, because he's always open. That's kind of a cool nickname that has kind of stuck with him. Mm-hmm. Very unique. Also, you've got the brothers Mendoza, who both throw for a touchdown in Saturday's game. First of all, I think they are the only brothers at quarterback on a D1 roster in the country. definitely the only brothers that threw for a touchdown on this past Saturday on the same team. So they've got that going for them. But Fernando Mendoza had, I don't want to say it was a coming out party because this is, he's not a freshman. He's, you know, had his great times at Cal. Just we hadn't seen it at Indiana just yet. But
he played better. You know, a couple things of offensively that, you know, probably kept their performance from being a great one was there was too many drop balls on Saturday that were catchable. Surratt had one, EJ Williams had one, and there was a couple others in there too. But
offense, just how pleased are you, and what is your mind kind of just, you know, evaluate that out?
Yeah, well, I'm very pleased in the effort that our offensive line gave, our running backs, our receivers, and our tight ends. I think they all played fantastic. However, you know, although the score was, you know, amazing, we put up a ton of yards, there's still some opportunities that, you know, myself that I left on the table, could have had one of LeBron Bond there deep late, and a couple others that were, you know, just this close, but, you know, just as close as what we need to, you know, take that standard to the next level in order to keep this momentum rolling, in order to have these big games against Big Ten opponents and further.
You feel you're getting closer to that?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I'm getting closer. I think the first game, to be quite honest, with, especially against ODU, a little too excited, wanted, you know, to have, you know, a perfect debut and show Hoosier fans, you know, what I had. And however, you know, I just had to go back to the fundamentals. And like Coach Cignetti always preaches, one play at a time, 0-0. So I think whenever, you know, anybody does that process in our offense, you see the success we have.
Your thoughts on Elijah Surratt and, you know, his game today?
Fantastic. I mean, he's Waffle House. I didn't target him enough the first game. And evidently, I think I targeted him enough today. So still got to spread.
There you go. Fernando Mendoza talking about not getting the ball enough to Waffle House in week one, but making up for that in week two without question, as they connected three times in the end zone. And he would go on to throw a fourth touchdown. And, of course, his brother would get a touchdown later in the game as well. Great sign for little brother, because he's come in and just looked good both times. Looks like he belongs.
Yeah, I'd say he's, you know, he's very well grounded in the offensive scheme, being that this is his second year, and you can see that based upon his outward confidence when he takes the field, when whatever time that is. And I think he's a you know, a adequate backup at this point in time, that they don't have to worry that if something were to happen, and I'm not wishing it does, but they've got a capable quarterback in the wings that can go out and run the offense and maybe run it at a high level.
Absolutely. And defensively, Indiana also looked good as they kept the running game down to what, 89 yards total. Aiden Fisher, the head of that snake. What did we'll have to get his words in here as well to see what Aiden had to say, as Indiana does do what they needed to do defensively, even though it's against a team that you didn't expect a lot. Kennesaw State ended up going through three different quarterbacks, which was a little surprising, but maybe they were just needing to get work for those guys. I'm not sure exactly what that was, but they definitely went through a group of guys in all three. Dexter Williams didn't last long as the starter, which was a little surprising. But Aiden Fisher, the leader, having trouble getting that up. I'll get that up.
There it is.
There we go.
Fisher.
I guess, first of all, just your thoughts on coming back week two, getting a dominant win. Just what were the big keys between you play well week one, but don't dominate, you dominate week two?
Yeah, we had a lot of details last week that we really need to clean up, a lot of missed opportunities. And kind of the same thing in this game, we have a lot of stuff that we need to clean up, tackling, you know, myself especially, but just took advantage of more opportunities when we had them. And I think that was, you know, really what ended up with the result that we got.
You guys had 14 tackles for loss today. What was the key to getting that done and being aggressive going upfield?
Yeah, I mean, that's it right there, just being aggressive. You know, we talked about it after week one that we weren't aggressive enough. We didn't play hard enough. This defense is built on TFLs and explosive plays and, you know, all the exciting things. And, you know, we didn't get that done week one. So we practice all week. It's, you know, gelling together, meshing together a little bit better than we did in week one, and, you know, playing faster and playing more physical and getting vertical in gaps.
I want to say Aiden Fisher, the captain of Indiana's defense. We'll hear more from him this week as well as the rest of the guys. So what did you see from a growth rate from weeks one to week two on the offensive side?
Well, it looked a little bit more efficient in their approach, and Fernando seemed to have more rhythm within the offense because they got, you know, they got to some of the things that they were doing a year ago. There were some RPOs in there this week where he was able to read it and threw it a couple times in that scenario. I saw some creativity come back into the offense, especially when they got into the red zone to get points on the board. I thought there was some times there where you saw the creativity of plays that enabled them to have a high efficient red zone this past Saturday. And then, you know, I thought the offensive line again did a tremendous job on all fronts, from protection to the run game again. You know, we keep going on about the running game, but I'm telling you this will be a good group to see how far they go with this running game, because they've got a three-headed monster, and all three of them are capable backs that have all different talents. But right now, you know, Hemby is getting 7-8 yards a crack, you know, no matter what they run. And that's the one thing I think that's going to help this offense more and more and more is the ability to run the football effectively. And I think that's only going to pay dividends.
They didn't quite have that last year. Now, they were more pass oriented, but also they didn't have the strength of the running game that they have this year, in my opinion. And we've talked about Roman Hemby coming in, but it ain't just Roman Hemby.
No, it's,
I mean, Lee Beebe has been, or Kalon Black, of course, is solid, but Lee Beebe has been a great surprise as well, leading the leading rusher this past week.
Right. No, I mean, that's what I mean. I think what's the difference this year from what last year was, I think there's a little bit more power in the running game in terms of the physicality that those backs bring to the table. You know, Ellison and Taysom were both good running backs, and Taysom would probably fit more with the Hembys and Black in terms of their running style. Ellison was more of a finesse guy. And I just think you see when these kids run the football, they run hard and they're always falling forward. And, I think the offensive line has done a great job with providing the lanes vertically for those guys to get up and through the hole as quick as they do.
Yeah, doing a fantastic job, and they'll have one more game to get things more in line against Indiana State this week. And while Indiana will be heavily favored, Indiana State is better than they have been.
Yeah, I mean, again, they've played a couple games. They had, a good win this last weekend against Eastern Illinois. They'll be a sound, fundamentally sound team, Coach Mallory, that we'll bring in. But Indiana really should get control of this game early and put a pretty good win behind them after this week to go get ready for Illinois. That's the one thing they'll have to keep from doing is peeking ahead this week, because that's, you know, that game against Illinois is getting louder and louder and louder. And you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're starting to peek ahead because, you know, you think you got Indiana State coming in this weekend that you don't have to give it your all. So I'm sure they'll be pretty physical on them this week in terms of making sure they have their attention and it's geared fully at Indiana State and no talking or thinking of what's coming next in another week against Illinois. So, but you're correct. They, you know, maybe a little better team than Indiana State has, but again, Indiana on paper, pretty dominant against the Sycamores.
Yeah. I haven't seen the spread yet, And I'm kind of looking for that right now to see if they, surely they have one out because they've got it out for everybody else. And they don't, I don't think we have a time. Well, you know, no, that game's it.
It's Friday night.
It's Friday night game. That's right. Surely they have a line on this game, right?
They usually do, but sometimes when you get these one double A teams yep. versus a Big Ten team, they don't necessarily put it out too early.
Yeah, we'll see. But Indiana does the job they need to do as they get off the mat from a so-so first game, but really improve on both sides of the ball as they head into, man, this Illinois game's looming large. You mm-hmm. got to take them one at a time, so you got to take Indiana State next. There's no doubt about that. But the good thing about Indiana State is it gives them one extra about the Indiana State game being on a Friday. While they will take a day off, it still gives them an extra day to prepare, whether that's via video, you know, watching the Illini, because they had a big time. That's a big win. When you go on the road and, you know, Duke is Duke, they were solid. It was a 14-13 halftime game, and the Illini explode in the second half. So something for the Hoosiers to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and, you know, they Illinois plays Western Michigan this week, another team from the MAC. So that will be a good, you know, good solid matchup from that standpoint, another MAC team. And you're right, they, you know, they look like a top 10 team on Saturday by what they did at Duke. And you know, I think everyone thought that was going to be a good test for Illinois. And you got to say they passed it with flying colors because that game was a tighter game than what the score indicated. So, that game is going to be a interesting game come here in a couple weeks because you're going to have two teams that are probably playing their pretty good darn football, and you're going to see two talented teams.
Coach Griff is with us, Jim Coyle with you as well. As always, we've got more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio, taking our last break. Back with plenty more after these messages from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Andy, speaking of the Hoosier.com, welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you, Coach Shannon Griffith as well. I saw that piece that Alec Lasley had. The Mendoza brothers become the first to throw a touchdown in the same game, first pair of brothers since 2015, when Brandon and Austin Allen did that. That was for Arkansas, by the way. So kind of a unique deal, etching their names in the history books. Doesn't happen very often, and it probably will not be the last time you see that. So may see that happen again, which maybe more than once.
Yeah, that's a high probability of that maybe occurring.
Maybe this week, as a matter of fact.
Could be.
Any advantages at all to playing on Friday night this week ahead of that Illinois game?
Probably not. I mean, it maybe gives you an extra day in theory because you're going to be, you know, watching games Saturday as opposed to playing one. So they'll pick up an extra day in that respect, but probably not. I doubt anything changes drastically with the schedule that they have laid out, other than, like I said, they pick up maybe an extra day of rest before they go take on the next opponent. So I just, you know, I'm just not a big proponent of Friday night games, you know.
Well,
nobody
is. Everybody hates it. It is what, but you know what? It is what it is, and it ain't changing.
It ain't going
anywhere because they're going to get their money. And Indiana is not the only team that plays this Friday night as well.
No, they usually have at least three. Yeah. You know, two on the East Coast and then one West Coast team.
Well, I think UCLA plays on Friday as well.
Maybe, yeah.
Getting their money's worth, man.
Oh, yeah.
Getting their money's worth, no question about that. But who surprised you this week as far as in the Big Ten? Purdue to me right now is a big surprise so far. But USC has, to me, it looks like they have made a move up. UCLA, obviously, We kind of know who the bottom teams are, and that would be Northwestern and UCLA. I don't know which is worse, but those two were fighting for that category. Maryland, I got to be honest with you, I'm a little surprised at Maryland at how well they've done after having lost their starting quarterback and their star running back, and they're better than they were a year ago.
Yeah, you know, the quarterback they've got that took over, I think he may be a better fit for what Coach Locksley likes to do offensively in that regard. So, I mean, I know the game one, they had a good outing in that regard with him. And, you know, I think they played Northern Illinois on, was that Friday? I believe it was Friday. And they were able kind of pull away late on that game against NIU. So, yeah, I think they're getting good play there, and their defense is playing well. And, you know, he made a couple coordinator changes at the end of last season. And, you know, he's been very transparent as it pertained to what really occurred a year ago. And it sounded like they had some bad juju in the locker room. And he kind of felt that they lost the locker room as the year went on. And he was vowed that that's not going to happen. And I think thus far, the best cure for that is winning. And they've done that.
The UCLA Bruins will host New Mexico this Friday at 10 o'clock game. Mm. So the Indiana game, by the way, is 6:30 on it Friday is
a,
night. So.
Yeah, I don't know why it's a 6:30 kick either. That doesn't make any sense. But
and I believe Bloomington North and Bloomington South play each other.
Not good.
Well, and I think that happened the last time Indiana played on a Friday. The crowd. Boy, I've got to be honest with you. I'm not expecting a whole lot, being it's on a Friday. It's 6:30 game. You've got the two rivals in town playing. Just not a solid setup. But
I don't know who controls that. I know the Big Ten probably does with the Fox or whoever's broadcasting it. But you would think that they would take into account, just like you said, with the high schools, what game that's going on and so forth and so on. It doesn't help anybody with what is occurring on Friday night in Bloomington to have the best possible outcome and crowd that is, especially at a 6:30 game. That even hurts people that are trying to come from Indy. You know, it's just not a good set of circumstances there, but like you said, there's no control over that.
The AP poll will come out today, the week two AP poll. We'll see what changes happen there. Of course, there'll be some. Ohio State likely to stay at the top. Penn State number two right now. I'm looking at Brett McMurphy's AP top 25 poll. He's got LSU at the number two spot with Georgia number three. LSU's win, there was a lot of luster that came off of that win. It looked like a great win in week one, but then when Clemson damn near loses to Troy, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't look so good now. I don't know if that's a fair assessment about LSU, but it is what it is. Penn State, he's got it number four, then Miami. Texas at number six, which I'm like, why is Texas number six? What have they done to belong in the sixth spot?
They lost to Ohio State on the road, and it wasn't a beatdown.
Well, there's that, but who said that they're that great to begin with? Just because it's all the hype about Arch Manning. That's what drives me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, everybody and anybody is going to start looking at losses and saying, well, that was a good loss. And therefore,
Florida State is a better team than Texas is right now, I think.
Well, it could be, but they're going to look at it through the eyes of, you know, again, where they started at ranked and how they, you know, how many spots do they drop if they lose a close one? I mean, it's like Indiana. They were 23 or 24 after week one with a win just because they didn't beat Old Dominion by the number of points that some of the media wanted to see them win by. So again, I just think it's like you said, it's not going to be Indiana's favor until they beat somebody of significance, and that starts in about a week from now.
Absolutely. And I don't want to jump ahead, so
yeah, right. But again, it does, like you said, there comes a tinge of fanism with these teams and where they want to keep them, because they're going to look at it from the perspective of college football playoffs. Who do we want in? Do we want Texas to be in, or do we want so-and-so to be in? Well, we want Texas to be in because there's Arch Manning, you know, so we got to help.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, again, it's like I said, with ESPN having their hands in this thing and the FPI and the strength of record and all that stuff, and you're not knowing how things are calculated or how the algorithm works, it's just not a good transparent thing that they're putting out there right now.
Yep. And the Big Ten doing well so far with that.
Yeah, that's all they got to keep doing.
And I got to tell you, I'm really starting to believe that Oregon is the best team in the Big Ten. Although they are the lowest of the top three Big Ten ranked teams, they have looked extraordinarily strong already. And boy, that is going to be a very difficult matchup for the Hoosiers in week six or seven, whatever week it is. Actually, week seven, since they have a bye in between.
Mm-hmm.
But Michigan took a hit with that loss to Oklahoma, even though it was on the road and they didn't get beat down, but it was a 24-13 win for the Sooners. And you talked about the quarterback. You know, we've got freshman quarterbacks. Michigan's got a freshman quarterback, and he has done okay, but they lose, and that's a hit, man.
Yeah, and the fact that he's, you know, freshman quarterback doesn't help the perception of things, but Oklahoma beat them in every phase. I mean, offense, defense, special teams, they really controlled the game from start to finish against Michigan, so... Like I said, I think Oklahoma's going to have a say-so in the SEC because they're a much better team, and they got a quarterback that can do a lot of things that are going to cause defenses problems.
Man, that's been a great day as always. Coach, appreciate you as always. We'll hear from you.
Be on tonight, 7:30. Yep, 7:30 tonight. Yep.
Make sure you go to thehoosier.com to get that make sure you're tuned in there and getting all of the great coverage of Indiana from thehoosier.com. We're back with it tomorrow, heading out to Sig's Presser today as well. We've got plenty coming. Mike DeCourcy back with us tomorrow after a little vacation. Appreciate everybody. Big thanks to Fish and Greg Rakestraw. Most importantly, to each and every one of you. We're back tomorrow to do this again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.